Into the final moments, Alex Payne trying to keep this side going forward. Haskell takes it on now with just relentless chat, largely about himself. And there's Tindall to add the finishing touch of glamour and World Cup winning stories and a slightly sideways nose. That is how you podcast. A dominant display by the good, the bad and the rugby.
Hello, Dream Team. Welcome along to the good, the bad and the rugby. It's important to say this isn't our first official show of a new season. That is going to be out as per normal on Wednesday, wherever it is that you do your listening and your watching. But we wanted to come together and to explain a little bit as to why we've delayed the start of our season three, but also to take the time to pay our respects and acknowledge the extraordinary events of the last few weeks surrounding Her Majesty the Queen. Hask and Tins are here. This isn't going to be some deep dive into exactly what you've been through, but I think the three of us have chatted a lot, and certainly you and I have been extremely moved over what we've seen and the way that we've sort of communicated, and you've had a lot going on, understandably. How are you? How's it all been? And how do you reflect on it all?
Yeah, obviously it's been sad, emotional, but happy.
Yeah, you can say that.
In some ways, amazing. In other ways, to see the family come so close together overnight, and just, you never predict it. Obviously, a 96-year-old lady, you don't, you know, at some point it's going to happen, but you're never ready for when it does. And I'm not even a direct sort of family member in terms of blood. So, but watching what my wife, what Zara had to go through in terms of, you know, she loved the Queen beyond everything else, the connection with horses, same with the Princess Royal, that they had a real sort of bond around that. And what really blew me away was just how the country, how the world, they invited 180 foreign dignitaries and all 180 said yes and turned up. And I think the way that it was then, none of them made a fuss. It wasn't about, for the first time ever, a US president or whatever isn't making it about him. He slips into the background, does whatever he's told to do, and I think that's just a mark of who she was and the sort of power she commanded in it without really asking for it. She didn't need it. It was a weight she just carried naturally, what she was as a person. I think, no fuss, get on with it. And there was a good story that whether it's 100% true, I'm not sure. I got sent it by an ex-army friend of mine, basically around the plane that was used to bring her back from Scotland to England, and it wasn't the original plane picked, and they had to change it, and they went for this big old plane to make it more dignified.
This is in the planning, isn't it?
Yeah, so they changed the planning. It was a smaller plane that wouldn't have allowed them to get the coffin on very easily, and he had to go through this changing process saying, I think we should use just a bigger plane. It makes it more dignified when loading and everything else. Obviously, I had to get sent upstairs to get the all clear. And then apparently the note that came back, whether this was her exact words, where the Queen sort of said, because it was the same plane that was used to bring her bodies back from Afghanistan. And she was basically just two lines, said, if it's good enough for my boys, it's good enough for me. And that in itself just sort of sums her up. It was, they were her boys. And I mean, it'd be just amazing to talk to people who were like the coffin bearers were just incredible. Yeah. I think everyone, it's a tough gig, and some of them so young at 19 or whatever, and when you join the service, is it still for Queen and country? Because that's how she thought it was still, and it'd be lovely to hear what they thought and how they felt that week went. I mean, it was just amazing to watch.
It was extraordinary. I will openly admit, I had a little tear in the eye when Hugh Edwards said what he said at 6:30. I'd had tears in the eyes watching it.
I mean, that was the first thing that hit me. He had one. Yeah.
And actually, Kirsty Young, I don't know if you saw her summation at the end.
The monologue at the end,
unbelievably powerful. How hard did you have to pinch your inner thigh to hold it together?
No, I think I my stony exterior probably did melt a little bit. I had a few tears in my eyes. It's a very kind of interesting thing that befell the country and almost the world. Whether you're a royalist, whether you're a monarchist, and those two are different, by the way, or whether you are anti-monarchy, I think everybody was incredibly respectful and understood what we'd witnessed over the last 70 years, her life, and kind of you know, the progression they'd made as a royal family, opening the doors to allow people to understand that, as Mike said, you know, this isn't a life she chose. You know, if her uncle hadn't abdicated, it was an amazing kind of thing to watch and to see her journey and how, you know, she's not able or wasn't able to have any kind of political beliefs and almost being able to be so powerful but inactive, if you know what I mean, to be able to tread that line and to do so much, whether it was stuff with Northern Ireland, whether it was visiting countries, whether it was hosting dignitaries, whether it was the number of prime ministers and presidents that she dealt with, being able to have such an impact without being able to have an impact was, I think, what spoke volumes. And I know people, for example, who are anti-monarchy, they talk about the royal family, the cost and what they do, but I think, you know, what she was able to do was so important. And I felt really sad about the whole thing. I woke up every single morning with kind of like a bit of a dull, almost like a dull ache internally, just, you know, very sad that we'd watched someone so incredible pass away. And it was almost very much the end of an era, you know, because if you look at the world at large at the moment, you know, we're always striving for role models. You know, that obviously, we've talked about it ad nauseum on this podcast, that for me, sexism is alive and real. You see it all the time in different places. Misogyny is a real thing. And we talk a lot about women and young girls looking to find inspirational people, where they find them. Are they pop stars? Are they reality stars? But actually, in front of all of our eyes, we had the most sort of intensely special woman leading the way, dealing with, you know, powerful men with egos the size of houses and putting them in their place, leading by example, not fussing, not moaning, doing her duty to the letter. And, you know, and getting on with what was a pretty rigorous routine, never giving up, never demanding anything better, talked about her boys. And I think for me, she was the greatest role model and she was the best of us. And I just think it was amazing. And I think what was even more sort of outstanding was ordinarily the average person in the street is so focused on putting, you know, food on the table, keeping the lights on, working. And we allowed a vocal minority who, you know, want to cause fuss about everything, but because everybody's attention was on it, it was positive. Yeah. It was a really nice place to be. It was really, really good because the majority who don't normally speak on social media, on Twitter, on all these things, because they're too busy living, were commenting, and all of the nonsense got drowned out. And then just after the funeral on Monday, everyone else went back to work, to carry on to what they're doing. And then all the, you know, the Holly Willoughby and Philip Schofield stuff came up because people didn't have anything to do and those vocal minority were back to their old tricks. And I thought it was a really nice thing to show that when everybody's attention is on something and it's a good cause, just how powerful that is. Whether you love her, whether you didn't like her, whether you don't think monarchy's right or not, it was really, really important. I think it was a nice wake-up call to remind us all that the world is not a bad place. And when you're united in something, united in respect, it can be incredibly positive.
Nailed it. I love that point.
The thing that always kept is, it's like the world has lost their grandmother in some way.
So I was in Dallas the weekend of the funeral, the 3 days before, and everywhere you went, every flag was at half mast in Dallas. Mm. All around the world. I think you're absolutely right. Everybody, I mean, 4.1 billion people stopped to watch it on the Monday. Did you feel that as part of it? Or were you just very much in the family? And did you recognise that this was an event the world had stopped to watch? It has to be the most watched event in the history of planet Earth.
Yeah, I don't think you would think you'd sort of dawn on that. It was sort of when you turned on the highlights, you saw everything. You saw, you know, even though being in London a couple of days through the week prior, you know, what happened in Green Park, what they did with the flowers, then being lucky enough to go to Windsor and then seeing all the flowers had just been put up the long mile, and then had friends who were in the long walk sending me messages, photos, and it, you know, that's sort of where you just gain the importance. You know, you could easily say, well, why don't you just watch it on TV, you get better coverage, but it goes back to what Hask was saying, it was so positive to be there.
It's been such a sort of all-consuming experience on so many levels. And, you know, there was the pilgrimage element that you talk of, people wanting to go and pay their respects, etc. One of the things that I've enjoyed the most has been the stories that have come out about, you know, she was our queen and she was our leader. And there was a huge amount of respect, but she was unbelievably cool as well. I mean, you talk about the story about if it's good enough for my boys, it's good enough for me. But
the American traveler, that's the tourist. Oh, but a great story up about Balmoral.
Absolutely fantastic.
It's just an insane story. But
and there was a lovely story about the guest that she sat next to at lunch, who I think was Aleppo, and she said, you know, how is it? How traumatic has it been? And he began to break down. And just instead of trying to sort of find it awkward, she just opened a box of biscuits on the table in front of her and said, let's feed the corgis. I always find that helps. And sort of the moment just passed and he managed to regain his composure. There was a fabulous...
She said, like, he goes, that's much better now, isn't it?
That's much better now, isn't it? Yeah. And there was an amazing one about the guard who had the bottle of water under his bearskin, which she'd given to him because it was 110 degrees. Just, I suppose I reflect on that and think, is it good that we didn't know about that? Because that sort of thing erodes the respect that you have at the time. She was always very good about, don't know too much, I need to be seen to be believed, etc.
I also think that is why then everyone, she shared private moments with people, but yes, not to the many.
Yeah.
So then that was the beauty of her. She is, you know, she knew everything and never burdened other people with it. She kept, you know, she had that private moment, she'd move on, she'd never talk about that again. She wouldn't go and tell us
one,
and then it'll come out naturally in its own course. And, you know, mainly it's in a place where you're trying to celebrate what her life was.
But in a world where everybody is telling you how to do things, and social media, and, you know, we're all being told what to think and how to act, etc., she just did everything through display.
Yes,
she never needed to say. It was just all done through kind of showing people how to live
their
life.
The greatest of that was obviously when the Duke died.
Yeah,
all her family sat on the other side, just having to look at her, and all they want, you know, I would imagine every one of them was thinking, just want to be there next to her and give her. And because of where the pandemic was at that time, she made a real statement to everyone else. Unfortunately, our government wasn't watching, but of how it needed to be.
Yeah. The extraordinary thing that's come out is that everybody, and I think everybody probably in the moment did, but everybody has felt a little sense of ownership of Her Majesty. And the one I would use is I've never met the Queen. I remember actually seeing her at Ascot once, and I very rarely get my foot, but I remember taking a photograph of her in her bright yellow coat, etc. And I mean, she must be one of the most photographed people in the history of planet Earth, as we said. But my sister met her in 1989, and she would have given her a posy at Port Regis School because she was at a local school, etc. And I remember for years and years and years, we had a box of VHSs, and there were five videos in there, four of them were films, and one of them was Alice Meets the Queen. And it's just sort of one of those things which is, you know, it just gathered dust for years, but it just was the touch point with... Did you ever meet
Her Majesty? I did. I never got to sort of do the official lineup, but I was at Buckingham Palace a couple of times, and we were there invited. I'm
not invited.
On the window ledge, nose against the glass.
Yeah, dressed as Batman.
And I remember it was interesting because it was after I met her at Tinsley's wedding again.
Bowl up a Sarah Jones Husker? How'd you do? Yeah.
Hello. Yeah, no, I didn't.
Business card in the top pocket.
She shook my hand, and when she drew it back, there was a business card in there. I met her at obviously Mike's wedding. But when I was at Buckingham Palace, I remember she was sort of lining up, and I was Millie in the background, and she looked at me and smiled and raised her eyebrows as if to say, like, I know. And I was like, okay, I'm sorry. So I didn't get to talk.
Did she just touch you and go, take you to the tea?
But yeah. It was that moment of look of where even, you know, I just find it quite funny that she obviously...
Even the monarch knew you were an arse.
Yeah,
basically,
And she was aware of it, and she, you know, it was just a momentary flicker, but it was a smile and a sort of a raised eyebrows to look at me as if to say, you know, I've got your number. I scuttled off, but that was kind of a funny moment. But I was going to say, my favourite part of the whole affair was when someone had to come on the news and say, could you please stop leaving Paddington Bears and marmalade sandwiches in the park? I mean, how British you have to be to do that? It was madness.
I first met her in 1992. I was at school.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Doing what?
Because I was at Queen Elizabeth Grammar School, and it was our 400th anniversary, and she came to the school for fun, and I think I was in a science class, and she came in, got the Bunsen burner on,
and we had sodium on water periodic table.
Yeah, we got to say hello to her then. I didn't tell her I was going to say,
did you say,
before you knew it.
Be seeing you around.
See you later. That would be great foresight if I had.
Yeah, how much small talk and how funny people would have been with her.
Yeah.
You know, the most famous woman on the planet, the most recognizable woman on the planet and gets introduced every single day and wheeled out to people, and just how weirdly people would have reacted and what they would have said. And like you said, Mike tells a great story on the Kubbar Rugby Tour show about, you know, being reminded before you meet her, it's Your Majesty first, then it's ma'am, and whatever you do, men bow from the head, you know, not from the waist, and don't curtsy. And she, you know, Tin said, you know, you got generals curtsying by mistake, you know, men bowing like Mr. Bean, all the kind of stuff that goes with it. I would imagine she ever just sat back at the end of the day, which had a Dubonnet and gin, going, oh my God, you know, the chat levels must have been
the book could have been incredible.
You know, when you're following a routine, so I almost curtsied to the king the other day.
Did you really?
Yeah, without thinking about it. I was just following behind my wife, saw her curtsy, and I sort of, and then fortunately didn't.
Did you go curtsy into bow?
Sort of. It was a lower bow.
Right.
I think I styled it out all right. I might have looked like I'd stubbed something on my toe or something on the floor.
Was this in front of 4.1 billion people, or was this just a private affair?
No, that wasn't in front of many people.
I'm interested, actually. I was going to ask you this off air, but we might cut out. How does that dynamic change? Because I know you've always spoken very highly about everybody in the royal family, but in particular, you know, Charles, you know, is a very, very good man. But you're always aware of, you know, you've talked very candidly about, you're always aware of that situation. You never take it for granted. But actually meeting him now, does it have a cult? I mean, you tried to curtsy, but will it change the dynamic? Will you have a bit of back slapping?
Or
will
you dynamic.
Yeah, interesting. I'm very aware of the official. So, but then I think once the official bit's done, I think I would have a way closer relationship because of history. Whereas for anyone who ever met the Queen, she was always the Queen. So you only knew her as that, and you held her in that regard, whatever. Whereas Charles has obviously done so much work with the Prince's Trust, and everyone's met him in his role as the Prince of Wales. Now he's gone up to the king. Will people? Hopefully.
I wonder if a lot of times what you would have seen on TV, the tradition, there's always a person lurking in the background to kind of tell you the protocol. I wonder if, you know, before you do it, someone's going to whip out and go, Mike, you know, he's not going to down that pint. Relax, take your foot off the gas. This is how you need to do it. You know what I mean?
There will always be that person, but
fine.
I'll always say I'll be uncontrollable.
Uncontrollable. That's the quote. Thanks for coming.
One of the things that I say, it's not a regret necessarily, but I wish she had known what the last 10 days or whatever it's been had held because of that love and affection. Do you think there was a recognition for what she had done during her lifetime?
Yeah, I, from the Queen's perspective, I don't think she'd have ever thought about that. She'd have just thought she's done her duty. And she'd hoped she'd done it to her best of her ability.
I think we can all drink to that.
But that's who she was. That's, you know, all she wanted was for people to do their best and put their best foot forward.
What did the reaction mean to those around you?
I think everyone was blown away. You expect an outpouring of love, but I think how it was, the world leaders that came in accepted their invitation.
Yeah.
Without questioning, immediately come back, said, yeah, we're coming. I don't think that's ever happened before. And then for them, I think one guy high up said, and then never to argue about who gets sat where, who does this, who does that. I need to be in front of him, or I need to be there. None of that was.
And they all
shared
a bus. Or, you see them, but they weren't even like executive buses with tables. They were school buses. That faint smell of vomit in the background. Do you know what I mean?
Marmalade sandwiches on the back seat.
And I think that sort of blew everyone away who was organising it. There was no jostling for position. There was, tell us what to do, we'll do it.
Yeah,
and that just shows how regarded she was.
Well, I mean, and actually, you know, if you look at her sort of staunch religious beliefs, you know, as the Archbishop of Canterbury said, you know, we will meet again. You know, she, for what she believes, you know, she probably would have witnessed all of this and is onto a better place and sees it all and values it. And Mike said it, you know, she would have just worried about her duty, but it's onto another chapter. And that's, you
know, enjoying a carriage drive with the Duke.
Yeah.
Did you put that picture up? Was it?
I did that with the corgi. That made me cry. That cartoon of her, you know, Lilibet, and I was a bit like, oh my God, there's something in my eye. I had to go and have a minute because that was really emotional.
I think that has been the best thing, is the emotion for mine has come from people telling stories about her.
Yeah.
I think that's where, because they're real. They're a true reflection of of the, what the Queen stood for and what she was, and they're the best things about it.
It's been an extraordinary 10 days, and inevitably everyone's got their own views and their own recollections and their own thoughts and their own emotions with it. I suppose, just in summing up, do you recognise now how lucky you have been to have had a very small but intimate audience with the Queen?
I do, but I also have loads of regrets. Not asking her so many more things. You know, having nervousness when when you sit down to talk, you get that lucky seat of being sat next to her.
But what would you ask her now, if you could?
Well, no, just going back through history and everything that she's possibly seen. Obviously, 15 prime ministers, I don't know how many presidents it is, but to go through everything, you know, when she's meeting dictators, she has to stay neutral. She has to just perform her duty.
And did you ever ask any of that?
I was sort of starting to get to that point, but... No, I hadn't barreled in. I know you would have barreled in.
Oh, God. Hold on.
Clipboard. Right. Question number one. Donald Trump. Yes or no?
The first question, yeah. Donald Trump.
Guaranteed. I did ask that, but guaranteed, when you sit there, it's not that easy to just barrel into.
I would have been like, budge up. Yeah. Right. You know, I want to know what Churchill was like.
Yeah.
That would have been amazing. You know, what was he like? What was the, you know, any really embarrassing moments? Did you ever worry that any dictators were coming in? Do you have to put the silverware away if anyone was nicking anything? There'd be so many
questions.
It
would only be you that everything would go back under lock and key.
I reckon they probably do have that when you go to Windsor Castle, Buckingham Palace. People try to rinse things. I remember when I went to number 10 Downing Street, I had to use the toilet.
Were you doing at number 10 Downing Street?
I get around, pal.
You do?
Don't worry about
like
me.
Water.
I just went for a wee. I didn't obviously do anything bad.
Went for a wee in number 10 Downing Street?
Just knocked on the door. No, we went there. I don't know why I went there. Some reason I went there.
Stealing the silverware?
No, I didn't steal anything, but I imagine people do want to steal mementos.
Off the back of a Grand Slam or something?
Yes, probably. So much silverware down, I talk about it.
The only time I went there was on the back of the World Cup.
Really?
And we tried to get Gordon Brown to let us off tax for winning the World Cup. He was like, no.
Didn't happen.
No.
Only for people in high places. Remarkable. It's been remarkable. And it's remarkable for us that you have been sort of... As close to it as you have, really. I mean, I think, as we said, go on.
We just need to clear one thing up, because this is your chance now. Because we've obviously been a bit of a somber tone and everything else like that through it, but the medals.
Oh, yes.
Do you want to just cover off the medals? Because I know, how many years did you serve in Afghanistan out of interest?
It has been an interesting one, the medals, because we had this discussion, the fact that I hate wearing them anyway, because I think you would be the same, possibly yourself. You class medals as a military sort of honour. Now, the Jubilee medals... So any serviceman, I am deeply appreciative of your service, and I have not served anywhere. And I actually haven't done anything to achieve those medals apart from being in the family. So the Jubilee medals, obviously got married in 2011. So 2012 was her Diamond Jubilee. So you get a medal if you're married in the family for being part of the family Jubilee. The people who work in her household get a medal. If you've been serving in the armed forces for 5 years and you're actively service, you get one too. So it's harder for the military to actually get a Jubilee medal unless they serve for a long time through a long period. Now, and also, there have been a lot more because you get a lot more celebrations the later on in life. So 50, 60, 70. That's where I got that one. The other one was an MBE. So I haven't been
on
tour.
Well, you did earn one. How many have you got in total?
Three.
Yeah, so one out of three ain't bad.
And also, he has been under fire a few times. Queenstown 2011, Las Vegas. Both of them were some heavy conflicts that deserved some recognition. I wanted to clear that up, not because I was taking the mic, because obviously I did take the mic straight away, but because you were getting some heat and people were being very confused about it. And
I did get a lot of unnecessary. You don't have to shout at me on social media, by the way. You can just ask, and if you just ask, I'll probably reply to you, as one person did. Thank you for doing that. I mean, I can't control it. You get a uniform list as well, and it says the dress code is strict. As you can imagine, full morning suit, unless you're military, wear your military outfit, full morning suit, but medals, one star, one something else, if you have a star. I obviously don't have a star, but...
But Ben, also, you have to wear them.
Yeah.
So, that's it.
There was a quote, which I was going to finish with, which the Queen herself said, "Sport has a wonderful way of bringing together people and nations." She has certainly left us united.
Yeah.
In her passing, hasn't she?
Yeah, she definitely has.
Quite extraordinary. And it quite extraordinary 10 days, which we will never forget.
We will never forget it. And I think it's, I'm glad I was around to see it and to experience it. And it will live on in memory. And let's see what King, the Queen is dead. Long live the King.
Yeah. a small momentary reflection from the three of us. I'm sure you will have all done exactly the same off the back of what has been, as we said, a very, very emotional and highly memorable 10 days or so. And I think just a thank you. I know other people have put it far better than we do, but we were saying at the time, weren't we, how enormously grateful we felt. And I think that is a sentiment that will be echoed onwards and forever. We are back tomorrow with our pre-season launch, which was filmed before, obviously, the events of the last 10 days, but a lot of fun to be had. So do tune in for that. For now, though, we have been the good, the bad, and the rugby. As we said, we're back tomorrow with our first proper episode of the season, and we'll have some special guests in that one and a whole lot of fun. But thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And here's to a very good season three.
You've been listening to The Good, yay, The Bad, and The Rugby, oof, with Alex Payne, James Haskell, and Mike Tyndall. Thanks for listening.